Welcome to Solder Smoke, a podcast about homebrew electronics and amateur radio. This is a program for people who like to melt solder and build their own rigs. For other episodes of the program, go to www.soldersmoke.com. For the latest Solder Smoke news, go to soldersmoke.blogspot.com. Please send feedback to n2cqr@yahoo.com. So, as we step away from our soldering irons and oscilloscopes, please join us for another edition of Solder Smoke. All right, guys, good morning. It's the 9th of August, 2009. That makes this Solder Smoke 113, kind of the late summer edition. Summer has really kicked in here in Italy. We're getting close to what's known as the Ferragosto holiday, which is a major holiday. I mean, it's up there. It's up there with Christmas and New Year's in terms of importance on the Italian calendar. And just about everybody heads to the beach. It seems like they all head to the same beach. And Rome really empties out. The only people who stay here really are kind of weird foreigners like us and some of the real diehard Romans. It actually makes Rome kind of a weirdly pleasant place. The traffic is really reduced. You could find parking spots. Lots and lots of the stores are closed. It does get a little bit spooky, and so we head out to the country. More about that in a minute. But anyway, here we are in Rome. The country place we go out to is a really nice area. It's between Rome and the city of Rieti, and it's near a town called Scandria, and then and another town out there is called Ponticelli. Ponticelli is a very appropriate name for this place, because it's like, it means sort of like bridges to the heavens, or bridges to the sky. And I have my telescope out there. I have my 6-inch mirror Orion Dobsonian Newtonian telescope out there. And we've dubbed this the Ponticelli Astronomical Observatory and QRP Station. I also have my Heathkit HW8 out there. I'm not a very good portable field operator. I don't know why. I always forget that one particular cable or one piece of gear, but somehow I got my act together, and in the course of several weekend transfers out to the Ponticelli area, managed to get all the needed components for a Heathkit HW8 station out to the summer house. And I actually got it on the air last weekend and fired it up. I just took the HW8. We had a nice little appropriately sized table and bench out there on the porch. HW8, the 7-amp-hour gel cell battery, Volkswagen, a solar panel, and the little Pi network antenna tuner that I picked up at the Trastevere Portuense flea market a while back during the winter. I told you guys about that. Also a little SWR meter that I found at the same flea market. Appropriate cables, and I brought out about 60 feet of kind of AC zip cord, and just literally tied one end of it to a rock and threw it near up a nearby tree. Man, that Pi network tuner tuned that baby up, and I was on the air. It was very satisfying. The very first station I worked was on 40 meters. There was some sort of really ghastly contest going on, and people were frantically shooting 599s at each other and at really high speed. And I heard up at the top end of the, I guess, no, it must have been, the first QSO was on 20, yeah. It was on 20. And up at the top end of the 20-meter CW band, I heard the signal that was obviously from a kindred spirit, because amidst all this CQ contest stuff at, you know, 40 words a minute, there was a nice 12-word-a-minute CQ guy taking his time. He was obviously not in the contest. And he was identifying himself as a QRP station. Better yet, the call sign indicated that he was from Sicily, where I just came from. So I gave him a call, and wow, first contact from Ponticelli. It was really good. He was running QRP, and so was I, and signals were strong, and he was from the area around Catania, which is where we were when we were in Sicily. And anyway, great stuff. And I made a few more contacts. We may head back out there today, or if not later in the week. And I intend, of course, to improve my antenna situation. I have a big roll of magnet wire, really thin, not too strong stuff. And there are some of these really tall, kind of, I guess you call them Roman pines, these really straight up pine trees that look like they'd be excellent antenna supports. I suppose if you're a real nut, you could find a real enthusiast. You could find appropriately spaced pine trees of this nature and create a directional beam using verticals and phasing lines and everything else. That would be a novel use for these trees. But anyway, I'm going to just put the vertical up there and see if we can get more of a signal out. Although I had no trouble on 40 and 20 last weekend. It was great fun. Let's see what else. Oh, to report the summer, Billy had his first job. Wow, his first real going to work job here, and it was great fun for him. He had a 1 week shift as the bagger, the guy who fills the shopping bags at the little store where I work. We have a little commissary there, and there he was. And he had great fun with it. It was a good experience for him. And he and I got to go to work every day, and really had a blast. I'm going to miss him next week. let's see what else. Okay, let's see. Before we get into the let's see. Yeah, I better play. There's a sound here I want to play. This is kind of the mystery sound. I guess we could call this a new feature: Solder Smoke Mystery Sound. No, not that one. That's just the that's just the lamp. Here we go. I'm going to play this sound, and during the rest of the show, I want you guys to be scratching your heads, figuring out what the heck this is, and then maybe I'll tell you at the end what it actually is. So here goes. All right, what the heck is that? What the heck is that? Anyway, see if you can come up with some ideas, and I won't keep you in suspense too long. I'll tell you at the end of the show what that's all about. Hey, there's a bunch of stuff that's been coming across the computer screen here in recent days. I haven't been doing a whole lot of homebrewing. It gets hot in the summertime, and I don't know, you know, there's a lot more activities, you're out and everything else. So I think there's a real decline in homebrew activity during the hot summer months here in the Northern Hemisphere. And I think I'm part of that. So I've been away from the workbench, so I don't really have too much to report in terms of building. But I've been monitoring some of the discussion, well, a lot of the discussions on QRPL and the EMRFD list and everything. I think I mentioned last week or the week, in the last episode or the episode before, that Farhan in India has come up with a really, really neat design for a 5-watt power amplifier, primarily for use with the BitX20 rigs. And a really neat design. I want to build one. Actually, I want to build several for the several rigs that I have sitting around here with defunct power amplifiers or. Really bad power amplifiers. I really liked Farhan's design. You could find it on his webpage. But I was really encouraged when Farhan came on and admitted that in the course of playing with these with the circuit and building things, he was frying transistors. Yeah, that's it. So you know, you with somebody at the very high skill level, such as Farhan, when you hear that he too releases smoke from components, well, it's all very encouraging. Thanks for that design, and thanks for sharing your smoke releasing experiences there with us, Farhan. A while back, I meant to mention this in the last episode, and I forgot that Google. You know, that there must be some knack victims out there in the Googleplex. Because, you know, they did that thing with Samuel F. B. Morse's birthday where they put the Google symbol in Morse code. That was pretty cool from the knack victim's perspective. They also came up with a special drawing and symbol to mark Nikola Tesla's birthday. Now, when you're... a few episodes ago, I put down that if you have World Moonbounce Day marked on your Google calendar, yeah, you might have the knack. It's sort of like that the Jeff Foxworthy comedy routine. Yeah, if you have World Moonbounce Day on your Google calendar, yeah, you might have the knack. Also, if you are celebrating regularly or even once the birthday of Nikola Tesla, yeah, you probably have the knack too. But the Google guys, they came up with this really, I thought, kind of neat symbol drawing there for Tesla's birthday. It featured a Tesla coil, appropriately, with all kinds of lightning bolts shooting off of it. That was a lot of fun. We're going to talk about satellites here in a minute. I just wanted to mention I wrote a note down on this, and I meant to tell you guys that that we spotted at random walking home from work. It was a Saturday. We were coming home from some trip, and it was the 11th of July at 19:30 hours UTC. And we were walking in through the courtyard of the house here, and looked up, and I said, "That must be the International Space Station," because it was just getting dark, and this thing was moving across the sky with that very distinct movement that you get from the International Space Station. Sure enough, I went in and checked on the Heavens Above site, and that's what it was. So the kids got to see the space station. This reminds me that I want to read to you guys. I'll hit the pause button here, but I'm going to be back in a second and read to you about another incident in which we spotted the International Space Station. Stand by. All right. I'm going to read you from the book, from Solder Smoke, A Global Adventure in Radio Electronics. This is a new book that I've been telling you about. And I'm going to read you a portion about astronomy and the satellites, and hopefully it'll fit in with what we're discussing today. It says here, "For astronomy, the move to central London wasn't a step in the right direction. I think the number of cloudy days is a bit lower than that of the Azores, but vastly increased light pollution seemed to balance out the slight advantage. Another factor was the portion of the sky that I could see. From our huge backyard in the Azores, I had available to me perhaps 90% of the night sky, but from South Kensington in London, I peered up through a canyon of brick from a postage stamp-sized garden area that couldn't really be called a yard. From this tiny garden, I could see perhaps 15% of the night sky. Fortunately, most of the view was to the south, so I could see the ecliptic, the path of the planets, the path of the only objects that were bright and big and bright enough to study from South Kensington. Jupiter's moons provided some fun. In January 2005, Jupiter was visible from the garden early in the morning. I'd consult with a computer program to see where the moons were all located. Then I'd go out with a telescope and a cup of coffee to watch them dance. As the sky brightened with dawn, the four Galilean moons would disappear one by one. I noticed that Ganymede was the last one to disappear in the morning light. Sure enough, the books revealed that this was the largest of the four. It was fun to make that discovery on my own. And I was not the only one in the family making astronomical observations. On January 23rd, 2005, I took my four-year-old daughter Maria to Starbucks on Fulham Road. Maria had developed an expensive fondness for chocolate cream frappuccinos. On our way home, we checked to see if we could see any stars. Look, Daddy, a spaceship. South Kensington is in the approach pattern for Heathrow Airport, and a plane goes overhead about every 45 seconds. So my first thought that was that she must be looking at a plane. But I looked at what she was pointing at, and it had the very distinctive steady motion and steady light of a satellite. I noted the time, 1745 GMT. I told her I'd check the computer to see if she had in fact spotted a spaceship. There is a wonderful website called Heavens Above that displays the orbits of many visible satellites. Considering the extreme light pollution that we were dealing with, my guess was that the only satellite that could have been visible to us was the huge International Space Station. Sure enough, at 1745 that dark London afternoon, the space station was passing right above London. Not bad, Maria. All right, not bad for a four-year-old. Pretty impressive, eh? Anyway, so we had kind of a repeat of that that memorable episode here on July 11th when we saw the space station pass overhead. What else got here? All right, let's see. Oh, just this kind of funny thing. You know, I, on the blog site, I've placed ads. You know, and believe me, this is not pulling in a whole lot of revenue, but it helps pay the ISP bills here at Solder Smoke. They're kind of fun too, and I think it actually adds some useful content to the site most of the time. I found, however, that you know when you put these ads there, you can specify text only, or you can specify text and images and video. And I've usually the Google system tries to put ads that are you know, tied to the content of your site. Obviously, there's no human intervention. There's nobody sitting there, you know, trying to make a decision about what ad to put on your site. It's all done by a computer appropriately, and they're just looking at the kind of keywords and matching them up with the desires of advertisers. It's a pretty neat little system. It doesn't always get it right. And I, especially on the video ads, there have been a couple lately that have kind of caused me to kind of make some adjustments to the Google ad program. For example, because there's a lot of references to Italy, very often the ads that'll be placed there are more related to Italy than to ham radio in Italy. And I was kind of disturbed to find that during the some recent political campaigns here in Italy, my website was carrying ads from one particular political party here. I'm not going to mention the party. We're not going to get into a discussion of Italian politics, but obviously there was this was not the appropriate spot for a number of reasons for Italian political ads. So okay, so I took care of that whole problem by changing to text only. And then that space on the blog page was shifted back over, and it had more ads for you know, diode ring mixers and ham radio books and a few pieces of astronomical gear. I also had I guess because there's a lot of science content on the discussion of science or the use of the word science. A couple weeks ago found there were ads that I was on my website, not I was running, but on my website we had all kinds of ads for Scientology. Again, you know, we don't want to get into a big religious debate here, so we're trying to avoid religion and politics, the things that are difficult to discuss. So once again, I switched to text, and happily we went back to diode ring mixers and superheterodyne and non-superheterodyne receivers, things like that. So anyway, the Google ads continue. All right, here's something else. We had some mystery sounds. I got numerous reports during Solder Smoke 111 that there were kind of mystery beeps. Something was beeping. One fellow thought that I was sending kind of, I guess, subaudible or barely audible messages. And hold on. Yeah, that I was sending some sort of kind of slow hell message in the background there. And then there was another theory that perhaps I was using some sort of power supply that was kind of switching on and off. But anyway, apparently, and I can't hear it when I listen to it, but apparently in Solder Smoke 111, there's some sort of tones coming on and off in the background. And I'm looking at my internet service provider here. It's kind of dropping in and out. It doesn't matter because I'm recording right now. I got the guy supposedly coming by to fix it up. But anyway, you don't get this problem when you're running your own QRP rig on 20 meters. The only thing you can complain about is the ionosphere. Anyway, back to Solder Smoke 111. I can't figure out what the tones were. I have a theory. It might be somehow that the QRSS signal from my little 20 milliwatt transmitter was being picked up or detected or something. Take a listen to it, guys. If anybody can solve this mystery, see if it's repeating I0/N2CQR. See if that's what's going on there. It might be. We might be able to solve a bit of a mystery. I want to. This is just for fun here. I came across. Actually, ordered it. I had it, lost it, and ordered a new one here. I might have mentioned this. Yeah, I did. I think I mentioned a couple weeks ago Arthur C. Clarke's Voices from the Sky. All kinds of interesting stuff in here. But there was also a funny series of quotes that Clarke used when trying to respond to some of the crank, or perhaps crank, or maybe crank letters that a famous science fiction author gets. And the title of his little article here is called Dear Sir. And it says here, one of the occupational hazards of authorship, not usually regarded as a high-risk profession, is the letter from the reader. I think that I can speak with a fair authority on this subject, having seriously jeopardized my amateur status by publishing, at last count, 35 books, as well as about 400 articles and short stories. The result of this garrulity is a fine collection of foreign stamps and a thick file of letters from every part of the world, including the South Pole. Some of these letters have not been easy to answer, or even, for that matter, to read. We don't have that problem here at Solder Smoke. You guys, the email is always great. But he talks about some of the ways that he instructed his, his secretary to respond. It says here, how to deal with letters of this type? Well, I have a series of answers graded according to the circumstances. Once again, they never run to more than one paragraph. And even if they are in reply to 50 pages of minute handwriting and an acre of diagrams, they are careful to avoid criticism and even more careful to avoid the slightest degree of encouragement. A typical specimen is, Dear Sir, thank you for your letter and enclosures, which I have examined with care. It is obvious that you have spent a great deal of time on this project, and I regret that heavy pressure of work will not allow me to comment upon it at length. I think it may be of interest to Dr. Isaac Asimov, whose address is, Yours faithfully, Arthur C. Clarke. Asimov and Clarke were friends, and they were writing about the same time, of course. It says, occasionally, something a little bit more drastic in the way of evasive action may be necessary, as when, for example, the writer informs me that his 30,000-word explanation of the rings of Saturn, the tides, the weather, and the rise and fall of the stock market is merely a prelude to the full 5-volume work just waiting to be mailed to me. Then I may take the coward's way out, and the writer gets this. Dear Sir, this is to acknowledge your letter to Mr. Clarke. I will bring it to his notice as soon as he is again permitted to deal with his mail. Yours faithfully, Pauline De Silva, Secretary to Mr. Clarke. All right. This leaves the correspondent completely up in the air, not knowing whether I'm being sobered up from the DTs, serving a jail sentence, or undergoing electroshock therapy. It never fails to work. Okay, it goes on here. It says here, very effective is the phony technical answer, which may run like this. Dear Sir, your treatment fails to explain the well-known fact that the locus of the contravariant tensor has non-communicative divergence in the region of the transfinite singularity. A simple extension of your theory leads at once to the obviously fallacious conclusion that the polarized proton flux will result in a heuristic phase imbalance of the hypogeometric catenary, so that, etc., etc. I can go on for pages, but this sample should be quite sufficient. The technique of fighting fire with fire is, of course, a little risky. The letter may fall into the hands of someone who will recognize it for the utter gibberish that it is, but sometimes the temptation to reply in kind is irresistible. This is how I once yielded to it at the height of the flying saucer craze. Dear sir, you have been completely deceived. The visitors from space who landed in your back garden and informed you that they had come from the planet Ying, 50,000 light years away, are imposters. I have definite proof that they are actually from the planet Yang, which is only 40,000 light years away. Yours faithfully, Arthur C. Clarke. It says here, my proudest invention, however, is a diabolical device that I call the random noise or zero information letter. This is hard work, and I employ it only when a writer has been abusive, condescending, or has used insufficient stamps, thus dragging me out of bed before dawn to pay the postman some mysteriously computed excess. The random letter has to be handwritten, not typed, and I stumbled upon the technique quite by accident when trying to interpret some notes that I made for a story. Although the story is lost without trace, I have something that is probably more valuable. In the zero information letter, all the neutral words are just legible, but the keywords are not. In fact, they aren't even words, but only realistic squiggles which look, at least in my handwriting, as if they ought to be words. I can best demonstrate by another example. Dear sir, thank you for your squiggly letter of the 30th of February, which has caused me much squiggle. It is really astonishing that you have completely squiggle my squiggle. In particular, your statement that squiggle, squiggle, squiggle is actually squiggle, 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 is certainly one of the most remarkable pieces of squiggle that I have ever squiggled. Squiggle, squiggle, squiggle to you. I cannot too strongly suggest that you squiggle at the earliest possible moment. Yours squigglishly, Arthur C. Squiggle. All right. Enough of that. I think we're on the boundaries of fair use there. But anyway, Arthur C. Clarke had some good ways of responding. I when I was in London, I think I might have mentioned this, I managed to get in a visit to the British Interplanetary Society, their headquarters. It was a fun trip. That was great fun. Arthur C. Clarke's old stomping grounds. All right, what else do we have here? Looking at the list. All right.
Sorry, smoke mail bag.
I love it.
Indeed. Yeah, solder smoke mailbag. guy wrote in yesterday. I don't have the name of the call sign, but I think he was from Denmark, or maybe it was from Belgium. But he was having trouble understanding the words that were kind of in there with the solder smoke gong. I guess it would be hard to pick out, especially if English is not the first language. And so I had to tell him that was, in fact, Billy saying, yeah, that's awesome. All right. Steve, M0SHM, plans on reading the Solder Smoke book while on vacation in Cyprus at the end of the month. He wants to make sure that we've all seen the website Spark Bang Buzz and is particularly taken with the homebrew cathode ray tube featured on that website. Of course, Steve, we've seen it, and as a matter of fact, my advanced computer system, the cathode ray tube and the display, it's all homebrew. If not, I'd be an appliance operator. Just kidding, no. But I remember seeing that little homebrew CRT, very, very impressive. Stan, AK2B, has made another video about another one of his receivers. He's got a great, I don't know if you saw the first one, but Stan has this great kind of topology, I guess you could call it, or architecture for receiver experimentation. He's got all the boards laid out there on the table. Everything is, it's all very neat. It looks really impressive, but you can see all the guts of the receiver there, all the boards. And in this week's adventure, he adds the hybrid Cascode IF amplifier that Wes, W7ZOI, and Jeff Dam, WA7MLH, have been working on. And it looks really great sitting there. He also added automatic gain control and an S-meter. I really like the way he does the videos, and I've embedded it into the blog. So if you go to soldersmoke.blogspot.com, you can see it there. Really neat stuff. Thanks for sending that along, Stan. All right, Alan K6ZY sends in a really nice message, and it's a really nice message, but it begins, the subject line is, "Damn you, Bill." You know, I don't get upset by that because, well, I get this a lot. I guess it's sort of appropriate. This is having just read Arthur C. Clarke's discussion of mail, but I'm used to these kind of letters, and I know that they always usually contain a description of how Solder Smoke, the book or the podcast, has launched somebody into a deep round of homebrew and solder addiction. Alan describes a project that he made. He picked up a copy of Experimental Methods in RF Design and started going through the chapters and his plan was to read through the book and then go back and start building, but he couldn't resist and he started building on chapter one and built himself a very nice little direct conversion receiver. Around the same time he was reading Solder Smoke and he read my comments about the use of integrated circuits and whether the use of integrated circuits marks you as an appliance operator. I wouldn't beat yourself up too bad about this, Alan. I mean, especially in the early projects. And then I sent Alan's email to one of the authors of EMRFD, to Wes, and Wes came back with a very nice nice response. I don't think we can call Alan an appliance operator just because his receiver has an NE602 in it. But I'm glad you got the sentiment there, Alan, and I think you're very much on the right track. Alan's also involved in this this great club up there in the Pacific Northwest, and it's got several Solder Smoke readers in there and listeners in there. And Jeff KO7M is there, and Eldon is involved, and it just seems that this club up in the Pacific Northwest is becoming a real kind of hotbed of homebrew QRP Solder Smoke activity. So glad you're involved with that group, Alan. Thanks for writing in. Gene, W3PM. Gene is the guy who got me into whispering with his very simple kind of minimalist whisper gear. I took it a little bit further and got rid of all the crystal filters and turned Gene's idea into kind of a double sideband rig. I haven't built the receiver yet. My whisper transmitter is still all hooked up, although my my activity has been mostly with visual. I'm running the visual beacon now, and I show up on the grabbers up in Northern Europe fairly regularly. But Gene writes in, and he's been doing some adventures in microwatt whispering, or whispering at microwatt levels. And he's having some great fun with that. And I took a letter from him and put it up on the blog. So check that out from Gene, W3PM. Paul, NA5N, didn't write to me, but he wrote to the QRPL list with a really wonderful message on underground antennas, AM broadcast stations, and listening to AM broadcast during the 1960s and 1970s. Really great nostalgia stuff. And thanks for posting that, Paul. And I might put that on the blog just to make sure everybody gets a look at it. Ron Sparks, our man in Dubai, apparently he was, you know, we thought Ron was heading back to the USA, but apparently he's going to be staying on a bit in Dubai. And this is good news, because what had happened was he finally got through the bureaucratic logjam there, and finally was issued a license to operate from Dubai, one of the first foreigners to get such a license. And then, just as he was about ready to go, the license came through, and then just around that time, he was told to head home. But he's been given an extension, so he's going to be operating there as A65BQ for another little while. So congratulations on that, Ron. And but this is it. Ron sends in this really cool message about satellites and balloons and everything else. I'm going to try to post it up on the blog, so check that out. All right, gentlemen, about ready to wrap it up, but I still got to tell you what that sound was. Are you ready for this? Has anybody got it right? Bats. Yep, bats. A couple episodes ago, I told you about my how I ordered the little crystal high impedance crystal earpiece for use with my regen receiver from hell, or as some argue, the regen receiver that's possessed by demons. For me, the distinction is not really that important, but the devilish regen receiver that I have. Anyway, when I got this stuff from the good fellows at the Crystal Set Society, they sent me a catalog of some of their other products. And in there was an ultrasonic detector that could be used to receive signals from bats. And Bob, KD4EBM, being an intrepid home brewer and solder smoke aficionado, knack victim, got the kit, built the bat detector, and has been, I guess you can't call it shortwave listening, but has been ultra high frequency bat wave listening from his home, and has recorded for us the recording that you heard earlier in the program. Those are the bats flying around. I'll try to post Bob's message up there on the blog too, because he's noticed some interesting differences in the signals that the bats have sent out. No QSLs from the bats so far, but well, happy listening, Bob. All right, guys, I'm going to wrap it up. Have a real good rest of the summer. Yeah, I'm not sure when we'll get the next one out. It may be September by then, but maybe I'll get another one out here at the very last bit of August. 7-3 from Rome.